Welcome back.
Welcome back, Steve. How was your lunch?
It was very good. And yours?
Wasn't too bad at all.
Good.
Thank you for the session just before the break there. So Steve took us through creating test cases and test steps.
I did.
Excellent.
So the really easy stuff.
The easy stuff.
Lefty, the hard stuff.
And he took you through some of my stuff as well, just because of the swell guy that he is. But that's all right. We won't hold that against him too much. So I'm going to take over and do the second part of this third module. So I'm going to talk about defining parameters. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go through managing shared steps, so how you can refactor some of those test cases. And then there's a very tiny bit there on managing requirements, but I think that'll be something, Steve, that I think you'll see in some of the reports you're going to do a little later on.
I will be, yes.
So, I mean, I can introduce that topic a little bit, or we can defer it. Let's see how we go for time. So this one shouldn't be too big. So in our first topic there, around defining parameters, what does the study guide say about this? Well, we want to be able to manage test case iterations. We want to look at creating a parameter variable, how we can rename those parameters, and also how we can delete them. So in terms of the need for data-driven tests, in terms of, you know, painting a picture, telling the story, testers will often run test cases multiple times, in fact, many times, often with different data each time they run it. So if you were to look at a screen where you're clicking a button, well, that's okay, you click a button. But imagine a data entry screen, perhaps a shipping address or a billing address for a credit card. What would happen there is you could have 5, 10, 20 different fields of information to go in. And as soon as a tester sees that, they sort of look at it and go, okay, here we go. Because just think of the variables, the diversity that you could have entering information in there. Just pick a surname. You know, you've got a test for an incredibly short surname, a very large surname. What about surnames with characters, like hyphenated surnames? Surnames with spaces in them. There's a lot of different variables there. So think of that variable plus people that pick states, countries, put in postal codes. Do you put in a 5 or a 9 over here? For postal code?
5 or a 9.
5 or a 9. Back in Australia, it's a 4. So wow. Just wherever you're asking for a postal code, the amount of variance that you'd need to test for there would be quite significant. So going in and running your way through these test cases multiple times with different sample data, it's a very, very common thing. So we're going to learn how to do that. So I'm going to talk about parameterizing tests now. When recording manual tests, you can simply prepend the at symbol in your test step in front of the place where you want the parameter to appear. For example there, enter at username in the sign-in text box. Well, that's just a string literal there. It's just the step that we would type. Before we took our break there, Steve was typing in a number of steps. The only new thing here is we're putting in that little parameterized value, that little at symbol's the magic. Now what that's going to do for us, and I'll demonstrate this for you shortly, is it's going to create a parameter called username. And that's going to appear at the bottom of the manual test case. And it's going to appear as a column heading. Each row of your sample data, or you can just go and put in rows and rows of sample data underneath that as you need. And then when it comes time to run the test, then for each iteration that you go through, it's going to automatically show you the appropriate parameter for that particular test row. Okay, so it's actually very, very good and very, very easy as well, I've got to say. In terms of the playback of the parameterized test, we just described some of that. So in MTM, as you go into the test runner, what you're going to see is the test runner will automatically display the value for the particular parameter. Now, some of the benefits that I've listed there, it can help reduce typos and increase speed. You can select a control where you want to place the parameter and simply paste it in there. So minimizing the typing is a big advantage for us in speed and ensuring reliability and repeatability in our tests. The process also then maps the parameter to the control for subsequent test iterations. So going through that process starts teaching the test runner where in your application that parameter's got to go. Okay, now that takes some practice. Certainly demonstrating it in the testing courses that I teach, I can make it look easy. Now that could be my famous last words. You know, oh, it's easy, just clickety click and it works. I should never say that in front of a live demonstration. You watch.
Especially not prior to the demo. Immediately after, you're golden.
True, true. I become complacent, and then it's going to be entertaining for us.
Yeah, we had PowerPoint.
Why did I do that to myself? Yeah, I know. So we'll see how that goes. But I suppose in looking at students as they get started with this, I usually say that in the class, guys, only about a third of you will get this to work the very first time. Not because it's inherently unreliable or anything like that, but there's a very specific sequence you go through. So as I go through the demonstration in here, I'll just take a moment, I'll go reasonably slowly through there, and I'll explain exactly what I'm talking about there. It's just that little bit of friction as you just get used to the system. But you know, once you get past that, it's a stroll in the park. Oh, stroll in the park. That's another one of those terms you should never use prior to a demo.
I know.
Yeah, here we go.
I used hunky-dory and something else too earlier today.
Yeah.
My apologies.
All right. So let's see after that build-up how bad my demo can really go. Okay, so what I've got here is I've got my first test case. Let's open him up and have a bit of a look at it. So it's a very, very straightforward, very simple test case to start with. So I'm going to go in there, I'm going to open up Internet Explorer, I'm going to navigate to Tailspin Toys, I'm going to click on Model Airplanes, I'm going to click View Plane next to Fourth Coffee Flyer, I'm going to work my way down there. I'm going to enter Anthony in the first name, Borton in the last name. I put all the details in that I'm going to enter into that field, into each of the fields, should I say. Down here I've got my expected result. So we're adding a known item to the cart, and then on checkout we want to make sure that the grand total is $50. So that's the main purpose of this particular test case. So that's all well and good, and I could go and execute that, and you know, that'd work. The challenge with that though is there's just one set of data here. And that'd be very, very limited, particularly where there's so many fields here. So what I'm going to do is instead of saying put in this literal, I'm going to put in a placeholder, a parameter, at first. Now, you know what, it really doesn't matter what name you give that parameter. First, well, that corresponds. In fact, let's get the application up on the screen so you can see this. It might help. So if I click Model Airplanes, let's get to the screen that I'm thinking about. So looking at this particular screen, you'll see that we're going to want to run through this test a number of times, trying different values in each of these fields. So how would you like to refer to this? So if the label next to it happens to say first, well, first would be a logical choice to use here. It doesn't have to be the name of the object. The name of the object could be anything at all. It could be first name. It could be TB, first name for text box. It could be TXT. Doesn't matter at all. So how do we want to refer to that in just plain English for the person running the test? So I've just put at first there, and when I move off the field down the bottom here, now with the screen size it's not as apparent, but this is a grid of values down the bottom. And all we've done is we've put this label at the top of the first column. Let's go and find the surname there, or in this case I think the textual label said last, and there's last now. So I can work my way through replacing those literals with parameters. Now again, I've walked through this specifically to demonstrate replacing those things, but of course, once you're familiar with what's going on, it'd be easy to anticipate it. And as you write those test steps, you'd be simply going and putting those parameters in the very first time as you write it. Okay, so it'll just take a moment just to keep working through, and you watch the parameters building up down the bottom. And I'll go in there and put at city into the city field. Now look at the language that I've used here. Enter at city into the city field, and I've chosen select USA in the country list. Again, that's just a string, just some text for us. Saying the word select makes a lot more sense when you're choosing something from a drop-down list. Okay, we'll pop in and put state in there next. I think we're nearly done there. What do I need? Just the postal code. And I'll say P code there. as opposed to postal code or anything else, just to show you that it literally doesn't really matter what you put there. Okay, it should be intuitive, it should be logical, let's be clear, but the name doesn't have to relate necessarily to any control on the form specifically. So I've gone and created those parameters, and you've seen the way that I've done it. We could also go up here and I can say insert a parameter. Like most things in Microsoft operating systems and tools, well, I don't think it's purely limited to Microsoft, there's usually half a dozen ways to do anything. So just choose the one that works for you. I find that just typing the at symbol there where I want a parameter seems to work quite well for me. So I'm going to go down here and let's start putting in some sample data. Okay, so penthouse 1, waterfront villas. I think that suits me quite well. Now I'll put myself down in Kirkland. That way I can be on the water. 98034. So that's my first row of data. And of course, let's put in a couple. So let's go and put Stephen in there. That'll be stephen.borg@nwcadence.com. Email in with any questions you have after the session. Doesn't matter the topic. now Steve doesn't deserve to be in the penthouse. This is payback for stealing some of my demos from before. So we're putting Steve into the basement. But I do want him in the same building so he has to look up at me every day. Isn't that a pleasant thing to do to a co-presenter?
Oh, but I can just come visit, hang out.
Exactly. Come up for a while. All right. That's pretty harsh. I'm sorry, Steve. And 98034. So I can go and put in, a number of other rows in there if I wish. But for now, just those two is going to prove the point. A couple of things that I will call out there. There is no, what's missing here, Steve? A nice little import. The ability to say that we want to get this data from a CSV, an XML file, TSV, Excel, a SQL database. Any of those things we could do with, say, data binding unit tests. No. You know what your choice is? Control-C, Control-V.
Yes, indeed.
Copy-paste. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and save that now.
But one cool thing, you can't data bind that way and pull things into this manual test, but you can, when you have an automated test, data bind back to this test. So these items here can be the data binding for executing it in the automated way. So all I'd have to do is make changes here.
Oh, you're a salesman. So you're telling me when you're over in the automated tests, where in fact you've got 20 other great options now, you want to go back to this limited option?
Yes, for a very particular reason why.
I'm
because
excited.
Somebody may, a manual tester who knows the domain so well, will have laid this out and said, this is the things we need to test. These are our boundary conditions, etc. And they may realize, hey, I've got a new boundary condition that I need to test for. They'll go ahead and just type it in here, and with no edits at all, your automated test will pick it up and run it as part of the automated test.
That is pretty impressive.
I think so.
All right. So I've done the parameterization there. I've gone and created, in my example, two rows of sample data there. And again, it could have been 10 rows. It's just in the interest of typing. We'll keep that nice and short. I'll go ahead and save and close that. And even though in the very next topic I'm going to go through and have a look at running some of these tests with options and so on, I'll steal one of my own demos that's coming up. How embarrassing is that? Okay, so I'm going to go and close that browser just for now. Let's switch across to test. Let's go and find that particular test case. I'm going to go up here and simply choose to go and run it. As you've seen Steve do, I'm going to go ahead and say that I want to create an action recording and start the test. So let's see what those parameterized tests have resulted in. So step one there, open the browser. I'll go ahead and do that. Now you'll see here that I'm marking that as a pass. Now that's not because there was any criteria for pass or fail, but it basically helps correlate that step to the actions I take so that I've got granularity in test case fast forward later on. Okay. The next thing it says is to navigate to that particular URL, so I'll go ahead and do that. Click on model airplanes. Click on view plane next to fourth coffee flyer. Click on add to cart. Click on checkout. Now have a look. This is the first time we've seen the parameter appear. So it's coming up and saying enter at first into the first field. And it's showing me the particular parameter there. Now it's witnessed my typing. So it's said we need to minimize the typing you do. So it automatically copies that parameter into the clipboard for us. I need to now teach it where in the application this has got to go. So I'm going to go and click in here and just Control V to paste. Now I'm going to move off this control. For me, I'm just going to tab off it. And when you tab off it, see this little symbol down here. That's telling me that the test run has now learnt where in the application that parameter needs to go.
That is smoking cool.
That is pretty good.
That is cool.
Okay, the next parameter, I'm going to tell it where to go. I'm going to paste it, tab off it, mark it as a pass. Paste it, tab off it, mark it as a pass. I'm just going to work my way through that, popping the parameters in, paying close attention to make sure that as I tab off it, that it does actually pick up that binding symbol. I'll go and drop the city in there. And now it says select country in the country list. Now it's got USA, and USA is the application default, but you are going to need to still go and select it. I move off it, and yes, I do have that binding appear. I'll go over here and select Washington, and I'll select that, move off it, and then postal code, we'll come and pop postal code back in there. Click review order. Click place order. Now I've got the expected result over here. The grand total must be $50. As a human manual tester, I look here and I see that it is in fact $50. I mark that as a pass. Now as the only one that had an expected result, that's the only one that technically needs to be passed or failed, but I had to pass the others for what I'm doing at the moment. And then the last thing is close the browser. So I'll go ahead and close the browser to have a good stateless test. Now I've got two test iterations here. Remember I put myself in there and I put Steve's details in as well. When I end this iteration and move to the next, it records that that particular row of data has passed and now it's moving on to the second iteration of data. Now, a particular test case can only have a single action recording associated with it. So instead of create action recording, my option is to override or not. Now, you'll only override if you've made a mistake. You can't edit manual recordings. Okay? And that's just fine. I mean, you make a mistake, you pay more attention the next time around. No big deal. But the benefit of that parameterization really comes into play when you think about the test case fast forward that Steve showed us before the last break. If I start this test, I'm going to select the first step. I'm going to walk all the way down to maybe 16. So I've held down the shift key. I've highlighted steps 1 through 16. I'm going to go up here and I'm going to say play. Now that's going to do test case fast forward. But what's unique about it now is that we've moved on to the second row of data, and sure enough, here comes Steve's details.
Nice.
Okay, and it's gone through to step 16, which is exactly what I'd highlighted. So, Steve, do you remember why I said, when I was recording this, I was marking those steps as passed, even though there was no pass-fail criteria?
Yeah, I do.
That was so that we can, you know, when we highlight steps, it knows exactly what that step maps to in terms of the actions.
So are you saying that when I first run the test, mm-hmm. I should be very conscious to make sure that what I'm recording is clicking through each step, that I'm nailing it, do an action, record it, do an action, record it, and then after that it doesn't really matter so much?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So I agree.
There's a lot about this where there's a great benefit in, you know, you pay it forward. And what I mean by that, you put that bit of extra time in the very first time through. Just take, you know, use a bit of patience. Just take your time, go through it. And any investment in a bit of care and effort at the beginning means that those action recordings are going to be a lot more reliable. You'll gain those benefits over and over and over again. So, yeah, certainly put that bit of extra time in up front, Steve.
I agree. I think that does a good job.
So,
Plus, one more thing. Although it's not covered in this exam, if you do decide to automate your test cases, it needs to be able to bind the action that you took to a particular method, and it happens to use, as the method names, the text inside of your test step. So if your test step says, go to http://, that will be the function name, and then inside that function is everything you pushed just prior to clicking the checkbox and say, yes, I passed this test. So if you're going to automate the tests, it's even more important to do so.
And I think I'll just add something to that as well. I mean, I love how it takes the text we provided as the method name. It makes it an incredibly maintainable, very readable test. And I guess people that start with coded UI up front go in there and start clicking and so forth, and invariably they'll overload those methods. They'll have a single method name that does 60 things.
Yes, indeed.
Whereas by starting with these manual tests, by putting those steps out there, you get more method names, but it's so much more readable, maintainable. You can go in there and add extra pieces as you need to. It's a big improvement.
It is.
Yeah. So it wasn't coincidence that I grabbed from 1 through to step 16. Let's have another look back at that. I basically said I wanted to fast forward from 1 through to 16. Why didn't I go to 17 or heck 18? Well, remember, it's still a manual test. Now, the term we used here was test case fast forward. When we say automation, we're probably more talking about coded UI. We're a little pedantic about it. I mean, generically, you could argue you've just witnessed some automation. But there is a difference between the two things. This is still fundamentally a manual test. And as we get to this step that says click place order, it still requires a human manual tester to eyeball part of the screen. We look at this and it says $50, and the manual tester comes over here and marks that as a pass. The last step closed the browser. Well, I can do that myself, or I can just play that last step and it closes the browser for me. Now, I selected 1 through 16 and said fast forward. Well, I can select as few or as many of those steps as I wanted, so long as I'm not grabbing any steps that have expected results on them. Okay, so I've gone through and created those parameters. You've seen me, actually, I need to do a bit of maintenance then. So let me just dive back to plan now and pop back into that parameterized example. So in terms of maintenance, a couple of things about it. I can go in here and select that parameter. If I wanted to, I can make changes to this. I can go down the bottom to my list. I can select maybe address line 1. And I can delete or rename parameters if I want to. It's not a common thing to do, but if I no longer want to parameterize that value, I can delete that parameter, come back up to where it's used in the test case, and revert it back to a literal, or maybe it's an entire test step that I no longer want to use. So if I was to remove test step 7, I could also or would also want to go in and remove the at first parameter from the list. So renaming and deleting parameters we can do, but also I've got the ability to delete iterations. Now remember, your iterations are basically rows. Can I give myself a little bit more space? So for example, I could choose to go and delete this particular iteration, this row of data.
Hey, that's me.
And I wouldn't do that to you, Steve. Okay, I can go down here and I'm feeling guilty about putting you in the basement. There you go. I'll let you come up to the first floor now.
Well, perfect. I can just open up the deck and walk right on out onto the grass.
All right. I'll delete the empty row. There we go.
There we go.
No one can take offense at that, surely.
It's interesting what that's called. That's called an iteration.
Yes.
Because it's one step through the code. I think that's something good to keep in mind.
But it's also that minor point of potential confusion. Because if you look up here, there's a field called iteration. Yep. Now, that's let's call that the big iteration. That's the iteration in the context of the sprint within TFS.
Right.
Okay. These iterations are simply iterations of this test case for different rows of sample data.
Yep.
Yeah, well called out.
Yep.
All right, I think that's everything we wanted to cover in that one. A couple of little points that certainly aren't going to be in the exam, but little points of frustration. In the classroom, I often notice this, and certainly it's not limited to that classroom experience, but let me share some of that knowledge with you. You'll see that students sometimes will drop a little space in here. So at space first, accidentally. And of course, it doesn't pick it up as a parameter. They don't notice it, so they go in and put in last, and they continue their way through. They realize they've made a mistake here. They come back and remove the space. So it's now at first. Do you know what that does, Steve?
Screws everything up.
Ah, no, it's not that bad. So what it does is it will put that at first at the end, because these appear in the order in which they were created, not necessarily the order in which they appear in the instructions. So do I really want to break this test case? No, I want to keep this one for now. So I won't show it to you, but again, if I was to put at space first and not notice it, this column would be missing. I come back and put at first in, it gets placed to the right-hand edge. Now, it doesn't technically break anything. The parameters will appear in the order in which they appear in the steps. But you know what? It would drive you crazy.
I agree.
It would absolutely drive you crazy. And what would you want to do, Steve? You'd want to say, grab this column here and drag it up to the start. Drag.
That would be nice.
Drag, drag.
Right-click sort?
Right-click sort. Paste.
I know. Change email address to city, country, SSN, change their names, and then come back and lay them all back in again.
Yeah. Remember I said pay it forward? If you were to make that mistake, yes, you can do some mucking around. It's worth doing it.
Okay.
You know, if you make that mistake and first appears on the right, how many places would I probably use this table of, you know, of data? I'd probably be using it on multiple test cases. So if 99% of the usage sees the first name on the left and one of them has it on the right, and I can only copy, paste, share the data between them, I'm just setting myself up for a world of hurt.
Yeah.
So if you make that mistake when you are creating it the first time, whatever it takes to fix it, you know, pay that time forward. Just fix it, and it'll save you frustration and grief down the track. Okay. So let's leave that for now. The next thing I want to walk our way into is managing shared steps. So what the study guide says is we want to know about how to create shared steps, designing shared steps that can be reused effectively across different test cases. The study guide says we want to know about moving shared steps and creating an action recording for shared steps. So let's understand the need of a shared step, the purpose of it. As any tester who's had development experience will know, developers often refactor their code to identify sections that can be easily reused, and duplication of code in an application is frowned upon. So we look for those things, we refactor them out into shared classes. You know, one place to maintain, one place to, you know, to troubleshoot. If there's a bug in it, well, it's a bug in just one place. So refactoring of code is a very common and well understood thing, I'd like to believe. So what about the same for manual test cases? Looking at the examples that I just showed you, how many test cases, if this was my application, do you think would start with open the browser, navigate to www.tailspintoys.com. What did I do next? I think I clicked on model airplanes. You know, how many test cases would start that way? Well, it could be 1, 10, 20, could be more than that. So what if the URL changed? Especially if we're working on a test machine, and the test machines are a little bit itinerant. IT folk will come along and they'll blow that one away, spin up a new VM, give it a new name. Maybe we'll change the port. That's just to annoy our testers a little bit. You know, all these things happen. So trying to think forward a little bit to make sure these tests are as maintainable as possible is a very important thing. And that's what shared steps are going to be all about. Okay? So the characteristics of a shared step. Shared steps can be basically thought of as mini test cases. Let's call it a testlet. Is that a word? Testlet?
I like it.
Okay, it's now a word. Testlet it is. A shared step is like a testlet. They can be imported into any part of a test case, not just the beginning or the end, although it's quite common in my experience to see them towards the front. They can be created by selecting a number of steps and choosing convert into shared steps from the context menu. Or you can create them independently, just as you would in a normal test case. They can be changed, and the change automatically applies then to everywhere the shared steps referenced. So change in one place, and that change flows all the way through everywhere it's used. Just like the concept of refactoring code. So let's go ahead and have a look at that. So what I want to do here is let's zoom to the top. Open Internet Explorer, navigate to that, and click on Model Airplanes. I'm going to want to convert that into a shared step. So these three steps, let's say, are used regularly, frequently, through multiple test cases. So highlight the rows, right-click, and in the context menu, you'll see we've got an option there to create shared steps. It says give it a name. Now, the name will be how it is identified. So that's a little challenging, especially as you build up a large library of shared steps. The name, it's got to be as clear and concise as possible, but also, you know, as short as possible is always a nice thing. So they're conflicting goals for the most part. So I'm going to say open IE, go to Tailspin Toys, click Model Airplane. I don't know if I'm going to get any awards for that name, but it is descript, it's meaningful, and as a tester, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what that's about. I'll click on OK, and what you'll see here is the little icon has changed here on the left-hand side. Okay, so what you'll see right there, step number one, it looks like multiple staircases, multiple steps. That's the icon for a shared step. You'll see that it's taken from three steps down to one. As I hover over it, I can see what those steps were. I can go ahead and save this test case now. When it comes time to running this test case, so let's go back and have a look at running 49. I can go back over here and say I want to run that test case. Now, this is an interesting message. The action recording that you have seen Steve and I create already, that action recording is 100% bound to the steps. Now think about it, that makes perfect sense. If these are the 17 or 18 steps that led to this action recording, well, it's not generally safe to then assume that if anything about those steps changes, that action recording is still accurate. So to be conservative, to be safe, if you make any changes to those test steps, it automatically invalidates the action recording. It's the only safe thing it can do. Now, I've certainly heard the complaints about that. Oh, you mean I can't fast forward now? Correct. It just means you need to do it manually. One more time, get your action recording happening again, and then you're fast forwarding. It's funny, you know, they've been doing manual tests for 6, 7, 8 years. They get used to fast forward, and then the idea of going back and doing it manually is horrible. Okay.
I have to admit, it is going back is horrible. I love that you've talked about. Well, you're going to talk about. I'll steal your thunder if I talk about.
It won't stop you though.
Go ahead. If you record those steps for a shared step, so the automation. Mm-hmm. You sure you want me to say it?
Go ahead.
Oh, if you record them in one test case, they will now work in an automated fashion against all other test cases that use those same shared steps. That means shared steps can be used for some crazy wonderful stuff. For instance, I love this. If you've got a long test that you're running, but your developers are really screwing with one part of the application, they're making lots of changes to it, abstract that away as a shared step, and then you can automate you know, record all of the steps all the way through for any of your test cases, and then they still run. You never run into that problem of saying, hey, you can't run it because the steps have changed, because they haven't. It only stops you when you get to the shared step, but you record it once, and again, it's good for all the other ones.
I couldn't agree more. And you're going back to the basement. So, what we're going to do, we have a...
Dang it!
you earned your way to the first floor, and now look what you've done. So I'm going to go ahead and click on close there. So let's go back to the demo machine. So it's basically, if you have a look here, it's saying that you no longer have the opportunity to override that action recording. It's been discarded now. So our only choice is to create the action recording again as a result of the fact that those steps had changed. I'm going to say start the test. And what we can see at the top here is this little testlet. And I can treat it independently. That's the whole point of it. I can go up here and say that I wish to start and record the shared step. Open the browser. Navigate to that URL. Click on Model Airplanes. And now I'll end the shared step. So that action recording is now bound to the shared step itself. Any time in the future now that I'll use that action recording, I can simply go and click play, and it's going to fast forward, let's be clear, through those steps for me. Now I'm back into its container, the rest of the test case. So I'll go ahead and view plane, and I'll walk through and I'll recreate the action recording that I did before. Now, it is worth just taking a moment to go back through and do this. And then I'll show you what it looks like when we go to use the action recording on the shared step in the next example. Go ahead and select country there. Choose the state. In our postal code, review order, place order, $50, I'm happy with that, and then I'll close my browser. All right, so in the next example, I now have an action recording for both the shared step and the parent. So I'm going to start my test. I can go and select play on the shared step. And then I can just continue by highlighting a number of steps there and saying play. And my test case, fast forward, is working perfectly well there. Whoa. See what happens? Perfectly well. Now I just hide the evidence. And I'm not even going to bother having a look at what that was.
And you can keep walking. Yep, I don't know what it is. But I do have to say, this is something about fast forward for manual testing that I find compelling. Mm-hmm. If something goes wrong, you just stop and keep manual testing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's blown up in your face or anything. It's you get to a point, it stops doing it and says, mm-hmm. I can't find this control. Developers maybe deleted it. Well, yeah. You just walk right in and just keep going through your test.
So in terms of hiding the evidence there, in fact, I probably did that too quickly and a little bit jovially, that's actually quite commonly the case. Again, as I said, in a classroom, only about a third of students seem to just nail that the very first time. And it's just the sequencing. Select the step, highlight the control, paste it in. They usually forget to move off the control. And it's when you move off the control that our little binding symbol appears. And in fact, I think I was trying to multitask, talk and click, and I can't do that. That was my mistake. So it would have been almost definitely something there that I didn't, I would have just gone out of that sequence. So people look at that and go, well, how do I edit it? How do I fix it? Well, it's a manual test. You don't. If you've got a poor action recording, one that's not working well, it could be something that Steve said. It could be that the application we're testing has been modified by the developer. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or it could be that my recording just wasn't a good recording. I didn't go through the sequence correctly. Maybe I missed a step. Maybe I forgot to move off a control to allow it to bind. In which case, that's okay. Just go back through, rerun the test, and just pay a little bit more attention. That's all it is.
Yep. It's a manual test, like you said, anyway. Yeah. You just run it again. You run your manual test a second time. This time, pay a little bit more close attention, and you're off and running.
Yeah. That's about it. All right. So I'm not going to worry too much about that. I'm just going to close out of here now. Let's go back to the demo. I'm going to just exit out of there. And I think as far as the demonstration goes, I want to show just... Maybe one or two other short things here before we call that a wrap for this module. So I'm going to go up to Organize. And in the Organize tab, you'll see I've got the Shared Steps Manager. The Shared Step Manager allows me to see all of my shared steps. Now I can go in here, and you saw me create those shared steps from an existing set of steps in a test case. If I wanted to, I can also go in here and do that independently. I can just say, I want to create a new shared step. You know, I know in advance what I want to do here. So I could say, Tailspin Toys in test region. Actually, you know what? I'll probably prefix it with URL. What I could do here is I could create a single step shared step, which seems rather unusual. And the only action there is... navigate to http www.tailspintoys.com. Okay. Generally, given that's almost always the very first thing you do, realistically, I'd probably have a two-step here. I'd open the browser, then do the navigate. Okay, but I want to call this out slightly differently. Steve, can you think of any reason why putting a URL like this, you know, why would you have a shared step with only, you know, one step in it? Can you think of any benefit?
Well, one, I may be changing that URL at some point in the future. That may be my test URL.
Yeah.
Secondly, it may be that you want to put later on, inject something in there like an additional step that says open IE, mm-hmm. navigate to blah, 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 blah. In that case, none of your other test cases would be impacted at all. Mm-hmm. You just have to re-record that one shared step.
So it's a great thing to do for maintainability.
It is.
So again, to repeat that, if that URL ever changes, I just change it in one place and that flows through everywhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. So typical things you might do here would include things like a URL, logon credentials. So if we had to log on to Tailspin Toys with a username and password, putting username password into a shared step. Again, logically, you're going to want to log on typically in many test cases, mm-hmm. but if those credentials change, again, you change it in one place. Now up here, I prefixed the name with URL. So all of my URLs are going to sit together in the list of shared steps. Here I've said Tailspin Toys in the test region, but I could have Tailspin Toys in staging, I could have Tailspin Toys in dev or in prod. So again, I'm starting to think ahead about my library of shared steps and how I can make best use of these in the future. Now, that said, I will go and insert another step and I will say open Internet Explorer just for this example. I'm going to save and close that shared step. And I want to show you that I can either record the actions for this the very first time I'm using it, or I can do it independently. Is that a text we should be aware of, Steve, having left your phone on? Oh, I like that. Break to the camera.
It wasn't a text. It was something else, a timer of some nature. I put it on airplane mode, thinking airplane mode's the safest possible, although the room we're in, this is zero signal, so I thought I'd be safe.
Well, I aim to help with that subtlety by not calling it out too loudly.
Right, right. And not cutting right to camera.
Nothing but professionals here. All right, so prior to Steve's interruption, I'm going to go and select that shared step, and I'm going to choose to either record it, the action recording, the first time I use it, or I can simply go in here and say, I want to record it now, please. I'll say, create the action recording. Most interesting that my text didn't appear there. That's okay. While I'm in the mood, I'll blame Steve for that as well. I'm going to open up the browser. And let's go ahead and navigate to that URL. And end the shared step. I'll close the browser now. Save and close that. So now that particular shared step is ready to go anywhere I want to use it. Okay, so I think that's pretty much covered most of the things around shared steps. So let's go out of the demo machine and back to some slides. So one of the other requirements here, and this one I will probably hold off and let Steve cover a little later on. One of the other topics in this section of the study guide talks about managing requirements, how we can review those requirements, verifying requirements, verify that all the requirements are accounted for, and validating some test coverage. So you've seen that we've used validation-based test suites already. So that's it's one of the things that is integral in mapping back to requirements and making sure that they're all covered. But there's some awesome reports in there that can do this. But out of respect for Steve's topic later on, I'm going to choose not to demonstrate or talk about that topic right now.
Oh, although I deserve it.
All right, so I will defer that demonstration to a little bit later on, and I think that's going to take us through to the end of this particular module. I think after that we've deserved a break, a chance for all of us to go and silence our phones and so on. How about we see you back here in 10 minutes?
That sounds good. We'll see you then.